With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode of the Yankees Magazine podcast is brought to you by the MLB app. Yankees baseball is always live with the MLB app. Follow the action with game tracking and video highlights, along with up-to-the-moment stats, standings, breaking news, and more. Download the MLB app today. It's your number one app for Yankees baseball. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Yankees Magazine podcast. I'm John Schwartz. I'm the deputy editor for Yankees Magazine. With me right now on the phone, we have our editor-in-chief, Al Sanasiri.
Hello.
What's going on, Al? And joining us from his very clean basement, we have our executive editor, Nathan Makaborski.
Hi, everyone. Work in progress over here. Work in progress.
It's been one of the joys of pandemic life that as we do these Zoom conversations, Nate, we've been watching the progress of your basement. And I have to say, today's a home run. It's really looking amazing.
Well, we got three little kids here, so it's probably not going to last too much longer. But, you know, we're doing what we can here, trying to keep our heads above water.
Godspeed. So we are going to discuss a few things today. We are going to talk a little bit about the 2021 New York Yankees official yearbook, which I hope you have all made your plans for purchasing already because it's exceptional. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about Giancarlo Stanton. Obviously, this podcast is dropping on Jackie Robinson Day. It seems like a good time to talk about some of the social justice conversations that were very prevalent around baseball, of course, last year, and also that we're seeing right now this year, too. So I think that is a good opportunity to chat about the story that we have in our April issue about Giancarlo Stanton. So, guys, first off, how have you enjoyed the first week and a half, 2 weeks of regular season baseball?
I've enjoyed it a lot. I think I was with you for probably my favorite moments of the season so far, John, sitting in the press box. And while your company was great, the company that I really enjoyed the most was that of all the other people in the seats, just hearing fans cheer. And although it wasn't obviously a capacity crowd or anything like that, but they made themselves sound like a capacity crowd. It was loud in there at times on opening day, and it was great.
It really was. It was nice to be around 10,850 of our closest friends enjoying the moment together. Because, Nate, you've been there this year, too, after, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think you made it at all last year. And it's hard to express. It's just, look, you know it's going to be different. You know that fans being in the stands, it's going to be something you notice. But there's just something about that emotional heft of that first time you hear a totally inane cheer for nothing. Or for me, what it really was the booing of pickoff attempts. It was when you knew, like, nobody controlling a joystick of, you know, artificial sound would have made noise at that last year. But when you're hearing booing of pickoff attempts, you know, these are real people who simply cannot be bothered to watch this guy throw over for the fourth time.
Yeah, it was so great to hear. I mean, there's the scoreboard guys did an awesome job last year in 2020 of making the game sound like, you know, it wasn't being played in a completely silent cave or something like that. But there's no substitute for real, actual dyed-in-the-wool Yankees fans. You know, I was there on April 7th for Jameson Taillon's first start and hearing like the two-strike clap that he got for the first time in the first inning there. You know, hearing the fans voice their displeasure, even over, you know, over the radio or on TV at some of the things they've seen. Those were things we didn't hear at all in 2020. And it was great to be back. It really was.
And the smells, I will say, like, again, it's like weird things. It smells like a baseball stadium again, because there are people cooking baseball food. There are those moments between innings when you know, you're watching the scoreboard guys as they're, instead of, look, they did a good job last year, like you said, but they were working with what they had. Whereas this year, just point a camera at some kids and let them smile like crazy. And it's just, you know, I don't want to say it's easy because I'm sure it's a lot of work. And obviously, you know, we're all doing everything we can to make the stadium feel more full than it is. But there's also a tapestry kind of in front of you that's very easy to take in and, you know, celebrate all the little pieces of. And yeah, like watching people playing along with the little scoreboard games. It's different than in past years. You don't have the crew kind of going around the stadium and talking to people, but it's just watching them ham it up for the camera, watching them chase foul balls, watching them catch foul balls. Al, on opening day, we saw two pretty great fan catches of foul balls, which was awesome. And it's something we didn't see last year, and you didn't know you missed it. It wasn't one of those obvious things that you know you miss. Like, man, I wish I could see a fan totally, you know, biff an attempt to catch a foul ball and get booed by the fans around him. And then it happens, and you're like, oh, isn't that sweet?
I agree with all that. It, you know, the sights and the smells were so compelling for me. I don't normally eat at the ballpark. I've been there twice, opening day with you, John, covering the game. And then I was there a couple days later, ironically, on Easter Sunday as a fan with my family. And both times, you know, I hit the concession stands pretty hard and ate a lot of food. And I haven't done that in years, but it was really enjoyable and too tempting to resist.
You know, the foul ball thing struck me too, John. Like, you know, along the way throughout 2020, you know, I tried to document it a little bit just with photos and stuff for my own personal memories. And one of the things that I thought was so poignant and sort of unsettling last year was I remember watching a Yankees-Red Sox game at Yankee Stadium on TV, and someone hit a foul ball and the camera tracks the foul ball. And it just rolled to a stop in the middle of an aisle. And they like zoomed in on the ball. And I was like, when are we ever going to see a Yankees Red Sox game where a ball gets hit into the stands and nobody touches it? So to be back at the stadium and see fans kind of jostling for position, it's actually a really good time to go if you're trying to catch foul balls. So there's a lot fewer people with other hands to contend with. But yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because that was one of the things that jumped out at me too.
So look, we're going to talk a lot more about this stuff. The fact is, in our May issue, you know, we're all in one way or another kind of covering this return to play, you know, especially as the April issue was, because it's the first magazine that's being sold at Yankee Stadium in a year and a half. The May issue is actually going to be about each one of us kind of has a story that kind of focuses a little bit on different things from that. So we're going to talk way more about this. And I can tell you, even when you move beyond the features, Nate, you know this because we were talking about this right before we recorded. I just wrote a little community piece about the way that the team is using the judges' chambers this year by bringing in some frontline workers and other people who have been really working in the Bronx throughout the last year when most people have been lucky enough really to be working remotely. These are people who are going in every day and doing stuff, whether working at a food pantry or working as teachers and things like that. And one of the things that's really special about the conversations that I've been having for this, again, small 500-word piece is these are stakeholders in the Bronx, essentially. These are residents of the Bronx. These are people who work in the Bronx. And what they're saying is it's not just a sentimental or emotional thing that the Bronx wasn't the same without Yankees fans last year. It's a real economic thing. It's a real world thing that these are businesses and these are people that rely on Yankee Stadium and they're grateful to have the Yankees back because they like the idea of going to baseball games and they're grateful for the tickets they got. But they're also just grateful on a much grander scale that life can be back a little bit more to normal and that when people are walking through the gates of Yankee Stadium, that's a sign that things are working in a way that they haven't been working for a while. And so it was a bunch of special conversations that I think we're going to be having all year in a sense. I think this is going to be not an emotional thing that kind of fades away as we get to May and June. I think we all know, even in their normal circumstances, playoff games feel different than September games. So imagine what playoff games, if we're lucky enough to have them, are going to feel like this year after what we've been through.
Yeah, I mean, it makes such a huge difference on all fronts. Like you said, John, whether it's outside the ballpark, you know, the economic value that fans bring to the neighborhood, or inside the ballpark, the emotion that the fans can bring to the players. There's no substitute for it. There really isn't. And you know, we've talked about it before on this podcast about how we didn't really realize the impact that the crowd has until it was gone. You know, you always kind of just took it for granted. You know, sports are played in front of fans. When you go to a sporting event, you're part of a big crowd. And it went away for a while, and I hope it never goes away again.
You know, our job this year, just like it was our job last year, is to kind of document this moment in time and to really place it in a way that it's meaningful month to month and day to day as people hopefully pick up Yankees Magazine or check out our stuff online or pick up the Yankees Yearbook. But also, as always, when we're designing this stuff, when we're creating this stuff, you know, there's a difference between online content and a magazine. We're printing the stuff so that you keep it. We hope that we're creating souvenirs. We hope that we're creating mementos, and we hope that we're creating things that will have intrinsic value for the people who buy them. And I think that that's a good enough segue, I guess, to talk about a truly beautiful publication that we produced this year. I think the yearbook, I will tell you, I've never, and I don't know if it's the emotion for people who just kind of missed the weird year last year, I have never at this point in the year gotten as much positive feedback about a yearbook cover that we've done as I already have this year. It's a really, really special cover that, Nate, I know that there was basically 2 years of back and forth that you put in as we tried to prepare this essentially as our cover for last year. But man, it looks so beautiful this year.
We worked with the design firm that helps the team out with a lot of the graphics that fans see on social media, Foxhammer Media. So it kind of has a feel that ties into what the rest of the organization has been putting out there over the last couple of years. So, you know, we were really pleased to kind of be part of that organizational look, if you will. And I mean, they just did a really fantastic job with it. You know, it's a collage featuring a lot of the prominent players on the team, and a nice shot of Yankee Stadium in the background there and some other design elements. I think it stands out. You know, we try to make the yearbook cover unique every year. We try to tailor it to that specific season in some way, if at all possible. You know, our 2020 yearbook cover was certainly very reminiscent of 2020. You know, when you pick that one up years from now, you'll certainly be reminded of what went on in 2020. And, you know, I think this 2021 yearbook cover just strikes a really nice balance and is a good addition to the long lineage of yearbooks.
I love the look of it, and the fact that we're able to incorporate such a, you know, huge group of superstar players and Yankee Stadium. I mean, that's what really, you know, what really stands out and really makes it special for me. And when you get into the contents of the yearbook, you know, there's some special things, you know, there as well. And I think that's always been the case. You know, in previous years, we've done some really neat sections, whether it's a section on Derek Jeter for, you know, during his last year, or Mariano Rivera, guys like that. Obviously, when we won the World Series in 2009. And, you know, every year it's my favorite publication to plan out because it symbolizes so much. It's truly, you know, that annual publication, or the annual publication, if you will. And I think this one is no different, especially with what's inside the, you know, the pages of it.
Look, Al, those of us on your staff remember the real determination you had last year in the face of everything going on, that we simply had to make a yearbook. There were a lot of cases when it would have been, let's just do a magazine, or maybe there's not even going to be a season, who knows. And I took from that the real feeling that every year there needs to be a Yankees yearbook, and it needs to be something that stands the test of time in a sense. And like you said, I think we did it last year really well, and I think that this one is especially important in a lot of ways. I think this one feels very much like a return to Yankee Stadium. And that's not to say every story in there is about returning to Yankee Stadium, of course, or not even remotely. I mean, there's stories in there about Whitey Ford. There's stories in there, like you said, about Derek Jeter. But as always, you know, there's also just a perfect season preview, Nate, that you wrote. We didn't have a season preview in there last year because there wasn't a season to preview. We had a season review, essentially. But as much as the yearbook is about the bio pages and the beautiful art of all the players, it's also just this sense to pause right before the season starts and just kind of roll some dice and try to, you know, see Nate predict what's going to come of the 6 months ahead of us. And as always, it was fun to read.
Yeah, well, you know, predicting baseball is such an easy task, you know. no, that is a fun one to write. You know, I always I enjoy looking ahead to the season schedule and kind of trying to, you know, match up just what can be said about certain players during certain months. You know, what guys might be returning to former locales where they once played, or if there's any significance around other cities that certain players might be visiting, things like that. It's always fun to just kind of, it comes together like a puzzle, and you kind of determine what month to focus on, which group of players in, and that's a good one. But, you know, I think the yearbook is such a different animal than the magazine, because, I mean, at least in my mind, it's almost an entirely different audience. When we make the magazines, it's often, you know, we have our subscribers in mind, and we have the fans who are coming to the Yankee Stadium for maybe just one game that year who are going to pick up the magazine in mind. And with the yearbook, you know, I know a lot of people who that might be the only Yankees publication they purchase all year, and they have the yearbooks going back years and years for decades. So, you know, sometimes in order to make sure that we, you know, provide the fullest sort of snapshot that we can of the season as it begins in a yearbook, we'll take a couple stories from the magazine that we think are really just a good fit for an annual publication and put them in there. So I thought the story that Al, you wrote about DJ LeMahieu for our April cover was sort of a natural fit for the 2021 yearbook.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think about all the time, you know, that we obviously want some elements to be different in the magazine, the yearbook, and for the most part, you know, it is. But something like that, you know, this is a celebration of, you know, a player's future. You know, we a lot of times celebrate the life of a player or the life of a person, unfortunately, after they've passed, like Whitey Ford, or the career of a player after it's passed, like Derek Jeter. And there's obviously lots and lots of pages and maybe too many words for me in this year's yearbook about Derek Jeter. But something like, you know, someone like DJ LeMahieu, who just signed a 6-year contract. I mean, that's an enormous investment by the team, by the player, and really, you know, something that is so appreciated by the fan base. That's all I heard. I felt like everywhere I went in November and December, not that I went very far or to too many places, I guess that's kind of silly to say, but I guess let's just say every phone conversation I had during those months was, man, is your team going to re-sign DJ LeMahieu? I mean, the fan base was just craving for that to happen, and then they did re-sign him. He came back, and so it's a celebration of the future, which I think is going to be bright, and something like that is super, super important to be in Yankees magazine. It was a proud moment for me on opening day, you know, to see that being the April cover, but equally as prideful to see that as part of the yearbook with the Derek Jeter section, with the 1941 feature, and Nathan's tremendous season preview that I want to get him to sign a contract that he's going to write forever because he does it better than anybody. So yeah, it was neat that it's in both places, and I think so, so appropriate.
It's a great publication. I hope that fans will check it out. You can obviously pick it up if you find yourself at Yankee Stadium. It's available throughout the stadium. You can also go to your local Hudson News, or of course you can call 800-GO-YANKS or visit yankees.com/publications and pick up your copy, as well as all kinds of other publications that we produce. Subscribe, do whatever. You know, just go wild this time of year. It's really the time of year to really just spend as much of your money as possible on Yankees publications. I can't recommend it highly enough. While you are doing that, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll speak about one Yankee in particular, Giancarlo Stanton, and some of the heavy conversations that he has been a part of over the last year. So stick with us.
Hi, this is Gleyber Torres. You are listening to Yankees Magazine Podcast.
This episode is also brought to you by MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand with MLB.tv. Your subscription also includes the MLB app Premium, allowing you to stream live baseball with your favorite supported devices. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.
Welcome back to the Yankees Magazine Podcast. Again, if you are listening to this today as it comes out, it is one of the most special days on the baseball calendar, I would say on the American calendar as well. It is Jackie Robinson Day, April 15th. It's the day we celebrate Jackie Robinson's first Major League game and the steps that Major League Baseball took in that moment to become leaders in a changing culture, hopefully. it is also, I think, right now a time when baseball is also doing its part to take a lead in some of the conversation that you're seeing around the country, some of the difficult issues that all Americans are facing, and certainly baseball players among them. One in particular last year who really spoke passionately about the way it was impacting him was a guy who we weren't really used to hearing that much from, certainly not that much personal, and that's Giancarlo Stanton. I know I speak for myself here. I'm grateful to the Yankees. I'm grateful to my coworkers and editors at Yankees Magazine, because I think it's important that we got a lot of Giancarlo's words into this story in a real and true way. This story, which is in the April issue, it talks plenty about the fact that no one hits the ball harder, but I think what's special about this piece is the way that we got to talk about some of the weights that a player and a person such as Giancarlo Stanton has to carry.
Yeah, you know, John, I really found this piece interesting that you wrote, because, you know, Giancarlo is a player who, you know, we think we've gotten to know fairly well over his first few years with the Yankees. And he's a guy who's, you know, been around the league a long time. He's now in his 12th year. But turns out, which, you know, maybe we shouldn't be surprised, that there's actually really a lot more to this guy than just being a very impressive athlete. He really kind of bared his soul a lot of times last year. And I think the good thing about having a, you know, being part of a magazine is that we have the opportunity to kind of step back and look at things from a wider angle and put them into greater context. And so, you know, when players speak their mind about certain issues, sometimes it kind of comes and goes sort of quickly. You know, it shows up in the next day's news cycle, and then maybe it gets, you know, pushed aside for the next day's game or whatever. But the fact that, you know, here we are in April 2021 and, you know, able to still kind of discuss what Giancarlo brings to this team, not just in terms of his play in between the lines, but how he's sort of emerged as a really, you know, strong voice in that clubhouse. And I thought the way you kind of framed it and were able to relay what he's meant to his teammates and what he hopes to accomplish by doing so was something that was really interesting to me. And I think, you know, hopefully our readers can appreciate.
You know, Nate, that's an interesting point you make that I hadn't really thought about exactly that way, but it's really true in the sense that, you know, if I had written this feature about Giancarlo Stanton after the second game last season, when he made defiant, and I don't mean that in a negative way or in any kind of judgmental way, but his tone about his stance and the things that he was choosing to do as defiant, it would be a very different story than if I had written it after the celebration of Jackie Robinson Day last year, which was in August, when his tone was much more somber and really pained. And he really opened up to everyone listening, as did Marcus Thym, certainly, Aaron Hicks, and really, in some ways, most notably, Aaron Boone, about the pain of trying to compartmentalize your life as a professional baseball player, as a professional athlete, as a superstar in some ways, while also knowing that you carry experiences in your life that most of the guys around you simply don't understand. And it's not they don't understand because they don't want to. It's that they don't understand because they can't. Because even the most good-hearted and most willing among them can't put themselves in your skin. And like you said, Nate, to your point, having months of perspective to be able to see that moment in July, see that moment in August, and then see spring training this year, as the players were talking about how those conversations that had started last year were still going on, I think it allowed me and allowed us to present a much more complete picture of the full conversation and I think the full person.
You know, people have, you know, different levels of, you know, of opinions about, you know, the events that have happened, the things that have happened. I think what, you know, is important about what Giancarlo said, especially the words that you captured and used, were, you know, that he was saddened by the things that happened. You know, you look at, you know, a lot of things that have happened in, you know, and sometimes in the wake of these events, and it's greater negativity. It's violence. It's things that are out of control and out of hand. And he's not advocating for anything like that. He's simply talking from the heart and speaking from the heart. And it's hard not to be sympathetic you know, when you hear those words, and I almost feel if, you know, if more people who were, you know, so deeply hurt by the events that happened took the same approach in speaking the way he spoke, not being hateful towards the 99%, in my opinion, more than 99% of law enforcement who are out there doing the right thing and protecting people, but literally talking about the sadness that he feels for the things that have happened that went wrong and that were bad and, you know, that he experienced and has seen. I think that, you know, truly there would be a quicker and easier and better path to social justice. And those words, I think you captured in a good way.
I think it's also, you know, there were stories that I've wanted to write about Giancarlo Stanton for a long time. And one of them that I've always kind of played around with in some ways and never found the right exact venue for was something that I was able to get into this story, which is there's always this sense that whenever Giancarlo Stanton does anything on the field, it's the first time he's done it somehow. And that never really makes sense because he's one of the most successful players of his generation. And I feel like, you know, certainly as we watched him in the last postseason when he was just destroying balls, you know, nonstop, and people were acting like, oh my God, can you believe Giancarlo Stanton is doing this? And the answer is, yes, I can believe Giancarlo Stanton is doing this. I've seen him take batting practice and hit moons on faraway planets. And I've also seen, you know, him do the seven games. But one thing that always strikes me is there's always this sense of, man, when's Giancarlo Stanton going to earn his pinstripes? Or, you know, when's he going to, you know, become a true Yankee? And I always go back to, somewhat laughingly, but also not, that I was in Toronto for Giancarlo Stanton's first game as a Yankee, and he hit two home runs that game. I know it happened. I remember it. You know, I always joke that you become a true Yankee when the team acquires you or when you sign your name to a contract, and everything else is kind of silly. But even if you want to act like you have to do something on the field to earn your pinstripes, Giancarlo Stanton hit two home runs in his first game as a Yankee. I think that he probably earned his pinstripes that day. But it's never enough. It's never enough with Stanton. And everybody needs to look in the mirror sometimes and ask them why that is the case, and ask them why they treat certain players differently in that regard. And I'm not accusing anyone of anything. I'm not suggesting anything. I'm saying simply that there is some reason why we question certain players and not others. And I think Jackie Robinson Day, frankly, is a really good day for us to talk about something like that New York Post column from early this week, going after Gary Sanchez for not learning how to speak English, when the reality is, first off, Gary Sanchez knows how to speak English, but none of us, I'm pretty sure, of the three of us talking here, is willing to do an interview in a second language that's going to be printed and mass-produced anywhere. And Major League Baseball, to its credit, has made interpreters and things like that available to these players. But I don't recall this columnist for The Post going after Masahiro Tanaka in years past, or Ichiro Suzuki in years past. All guys who played for the Yankees and in every one of their columns or in every one of their interviews used interpreters. And I think that when we talk about Giancarlo Stanton and when we talk about other players in this team, we need to recognize some things that maybe we don't even know that we're saying, or maybe don't even know that we're feeling, but that seem to come out sometimes in our voice and in our expectations and in our demands.
You know, I think one of those things is this. Players get blamed, I think, too much so and too harshly for injuries.
I agree.
Unfortunately, it's part of the game. You know, we don't do a job that puts our bodies in peril. That's just the nature of it. If we did, you know, maybe Nathan would be hurt a lot, or I would be hurt a lot. It would probably be me, since, you know, that's no, I just think, you know, that we don't do that type of a job, or a job that puts us in that situation. Giancarlo Stanton does. And you can have your faults, like you said, John, with any player for any reason, whatever it is. But man, he takes a lot of heat for something that's out of his control. And it truly is out of his control. No. And I did a story with him last year, as you guys remember. And, you know, it was a different time and a different theme and all that stuff. But what the biggest takeaway I had was no one is trying harder. I mean, I could say the same thing about Aaron Judge. No one is trying harder. These guys are trying their absolute hardest to stay on the field. They're doing things. They're not just banging their head up against the wall. They're being innovative. They're working with different types of trainers and different avenues, and they're continually trying to keep their bodies healthy while playing a sport. And that's just it, playing a sport, not writing about a sport, playing a sport. And it's hard, and it's really difficult, you know, for somebody to understand that's not involved in it. I'm not saying to give someone a free pass for just about anything, but for something like this, it's out of his control. People think sometimes, and he talked to me about this, oh, I'm lazy because I'm not on the field. No one wants to be on the field for 162 games more than him. And again, I'd say the same thing about Aaron Judge or so many of our other players who've suffered injuries. But to me, it's just, it stinks. It's an unfortunate thing when you look back on, you know, the fact that he's had a rash of injuries and everything, but it's not something worth blaming him for. I'll give you a quick analogy, John, that you and I are both runners and can share this. I always write down my running goals at the beginning of every year. And one thing I leave out now is my goal used to be stay healthy. I'll never put that down because I can't control it. It's not something I can do. And you probably can relate to that as well. It's out of your control. If you're doing something physical, bad things are going to happen. Unfortunately, some for more than others.
Look, I mean, here's the thing. I am not a professional athlete. Like you said, I dabble in some running, but at the end of January, I think the beginning of February, I broke my big toe on my right foot and I couldn't believe it. Like, whatever, you know, okay, this is going to hurt for a few days. I thought I stubbed my toe. And I just went to the doctor for like the fifth time yesterday, and I'm being told, oh, it's healing, but, you know, looking at an x-ray, there's still a crack in it, and you still can't run, you still can't do all this stuff. So am I not going for a run today when it's finally sunny out because I don't want to or I'm lazy? Maybe. But in reality, I'm not doing it because I'm not allowed to. They're telling me I can't do it. If there was something I could do, if I could eat something or drink something to make this bone heal faster so that I could stop walking around like an idiot, I would. Unfortunately, you know, it's a broken bone. It needs to heal. To echo your point now, if I fractured my wrist right now, I would not be able to type probably. If I wasn't able to type, I would not be of much service to you. You know, I would hope that you wouldn't come to my house and boo me as I tried to work my way through it.
No, I would, John, but just because you just gave me a great idea of something fun to do. So that's the only reason I would do it, just for the simple joy of it. But it wouldn't make much sense. I'll say that much.
Well, you know, the other thing that we don't have to deal with besides injuries is having our salaries splashed across the newspaper headlines and having everybody in the world know what we're getting paid for doing the job we do. And I think that is also a big factor. And so, you know, when a guy like Giancarlo, has, you know, injury problems or is going through a tough stretch at the plate or wants to, you know, speak his mind and hopefully, you know, foster conversations that lead to real progress. A lot of people get hung up on the money that he makes. And I think that's a shame. You know, I think it's always struck me as being kind of strange in sports that for some reason, that profession, your salary is public knowledge. You know, it's not the way in most professions. And so I wonder, John, what you think, you know, how differently would Stanton be treated if people didn't know how much money he makes?
Yeah, I'm sure that's a huge part of it. And also I'm sure a huge part of it is that he's very visibly, you know, like 6'8 or 6'7 and, you know, the size of a defensive end. I think that stuff all plays a part of it too. You look at this guy, you read about him, you know, the deal he signed with Miami and whatever, and you create your expectations that way. The fact of the matter is when he comes up in the lineup, the team's need for him to come through in that moment is no different from when Mike Tauchman comes up in the lineup. You know, everybody bats once, essentially, one through nine. And so, yeah, Nate, of course, there are these outsized expectations of him. But I would also say that, first off, just as a free market believer or whatever you want to call it, like Giancarlo Stanton is paid with the market. I mean, he, you know, he didn't force anyone. He didn't cheat his way to any of this money. There were two parties involved in that contract. And the reason they paid him that much is because that's what the market said he was worth.
I just, that resonates with me so much. When you hear a player being criticized for making a certain amount of money, my question in response to people saying that is, if you were offered a certain amount of money to do your job, would you take less simply because you think, you know what, I'm not worth it, or I'm making too much. It's not a lot of people in this world that would do that. We try to make as much money as we can. And when our employer offers us a certain amount of money, we generally say, okay. We don't say, no, this is not appropriate, I'll take less. So from that standpoint, I couldn't agree with you more. And then the other part of it is, I talked a lot about this with Garrett Cole. Obviously, he, you know, it's very highly publicized how big his salary is, just like Giancarlo Stanton. There are only a few people in the world, literally a few people in the world, who can do what those guys do. And when I say a few people in the world, like less than five people in the world who can do what Giancarlo Stanton can do and what Garrett Cole can do. So when you look at other fields where someone has such a tremendous expertise in something that they're literally one of three or four people in the world with that type of expertise, they generally get paid a lot of money.
There was a really interesting quote he gave that I used in the story, where a writer this year asked him, you know, if he thinks he's a leader in the clubhouse. And his answer was, and I'm paraphrasing it right now, I probably should just open it up and read it. His quote was, "That's not for me to say, and I also don't really care about the answer." And I think that if you just read that quote just on paper, it would sound standoffish, it would sound obnoxious, it would sound indifferent in a sense. And I tried my best in conveying it to say that's really not how he said it. His point wasn't, you know, oh, I don't give a damn, whatever. You know, I'm at the end of the day, every other week I get my paycheck in the mail. You know, who cares? His point was really, those players know who I am, and those players know what I can give them, and they know what they need to get from me. And I don't need to tell them or you what that is. I just need to deliver. I just need to perform. These guys do care, but it's also not for them to justify their caring to you in anything other than the box score. But, and this is, I guess, where we can kind of come full circle here, it also would have been very easy for Giancarlo Stanton, even as he was suffering last year, and the same certainly goes for Aaron Hicks, who was also very vocal about it, and Marcus Thames. These were men who really, truly felt everything they were seeing around them, and it hurt them. And instead of simply saying, you know what, I don't need to talk about this, I don't need to justify myself to anyone, I give them a ton of credit for being willing to come and say, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about this with the press, and I want to talk about this with my teammates, and I want to foster these conversations so that they continue, because these are conversations that need to happen in the clubhouse. And so again, as we talk about Jackie Robinson Day, and we talk about where the sport is all these decades later, and where society is, there's work to be done. And it's a credit to people like Giancarlo Stanton for taking on that work, because it's not getting easier. In some ways, it's getting harder because everything's more public now. And like I said, I was just glad to be able to write about that. I was glad to be able to talk about that. I hope that Giancarlo Stanton hits 75,000 home runs this year, not for anything other than to change the topic, because it's annoying, because we all know what Giancarlo Stanton can do. And the next time he goes four games where he hits eight home runs, we're going to hear, can you believe Giancarlo Stanton did this? And yes, the answer is still going to be yes, I can believe Giancarlo Stanton did this. I've seen him do this.
I take 75 home runs.
Yeah, you're small. You're lowballing it.
Yeah, a little bit. But I agree. It's true. You know, he's hit 59 home runs. So you can't even say, you know, the potential's there. It's more than potential. He's an MVP. He's hit 59 home runs. Like, if he has a great year, I think it's going to pay huge dividends in where this team ends up. And I'm with you, John. Let's hope it happens.
You want to check out John's story. It's called Call to Action, and it will be on yankees.com/magazine.
Well, to Al and Nate, as we enter now week three of the Major League Baseball season, I hope that we get to see a lot of games. I hope we get to enjoy a lot of good baseball. Nate, let's see some more wins for Tyone ahead of your story on him. Let's all enjoy 3-4 perfect games from Garrett Cole. I think that's fair to ask for in these next couple weeks. And in the meantime, to everyone else, I hope you enjoy getting Yankees Magazine delivered to you. I hope you enjoy hopefully going to Yankee Stadium, if not watching on the YES Network, watching on the YES app, anything like that. And I can't wait to see you all at the ballpark. Can't wait to hear from you. And Nate and Al, can't wait to see you guys soon.
Sounds great.
So that's it for this episode of the Yankees Magazine podcast. We are, as I've said, so excited to now be in our fifth season of this show, and we can't wait to show you all that we have coming this year. If you're not subscribed, what are you waiting for? We're available wherever you listen to your podcasts, or at yankees.com/podcast. leave us a review, leave us a rating. You can even send us your thoughts over email, podcast@yankees.com. And for our Yankees Magazine subscribers, by now I hope you've received your April magazine. If you haven't, you'll get it any day now. But it's a great time to subscribe and get special package offers with incredible deals. A lot of times we even offer free tickets when you subscribe, so always make sure to call 800-GO-YANKS or to visit yankees.com/publications to see what we have coming. Of course, follow us on Twitter, where we'll always advertise our deals there too. And if you'd like to see our content online, as Nate mentioned, get a taste of it at yankees.com/magazine. There you'll find all of our latest features to read. That's it. See you next time, and go Yanks.
Hey, this is Giancarlo Stanton. If you like what you're hearing, why don't you rate and review us? And while you're at it, tell your friends to subscribe. Thanks so much, and go Yankees.
The MLB Ballpark app will complete your next visit to Yankee Stadium. Buy and manage game tickets, redeem special check-in offers, access exclusive content, and much more. Download the MLB Ballpark app today.